Can we just talk about how awesome Agent Smith was in this movie?
My God, he was so fucking badass.
How about Cypher, too?
So should we talk like Morpheus the whole time? Do you believe in other things? Do you see yourself?
Welcome, Mr. Anderson.
Hey, is this my drink or your drink?
That's yours, because I didn't get my drink made.
Oh, cool.
For the dodging sour, I did not get a request to have a drink made.
Whose house are we in?
Are you a guest at this house?
Yes. So therefore, you're the host. And you are the host of everything,
you
apparently.
You are the host.
The hostess with the mostest.
Welcome, Mr. Anderson.
And shots fired. It is not the spoon that moves.
It is your mind.
Fucking weird ass kid.
I'm like, welcome, okay, Mr. Dalai Lama.
Instantly was like, oh.
Is it just me, or is I the only person who wanted a cookie from the Oregon?
I wanted.
Don't worry about that vase. What vase?
Oh, you bastard. That literally was my fucking sign-in.
Welcome to another episode of Three and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast, where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies from our private collections, and when one of us tries desperately to keep up, we'll let you decide which host is which. But for now, my name is Sean, and with me, plugged in, is Jeremiah.
Whoa.
Eddie.
What up, guys?
The body cannot live without the mind.
And Brandon.
That is no spoon. There is no spoon.
This season, we've decided that each host will pick a film from each decade, from the 70s to today, that exemplifies that time period. Some of the films will be underrated, some classics, while others will be overrated piles of cinematic crap. To finish off each decade, the hosts will have a group pick, which wraps up the decade in style. As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question: how many drinks does it take to get through the film we've just watched? At the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5. 0 is the perfect film that you can watch stone cold sober, and 5 is the sort of film that requires a download port to be thrust into the back of your head so that you can experience a digital reality.
I'm just saying, either just take the red pill, the blue pill, something, right?
I'd actually enjoy that.
Of course you would. Yeah. In addition to our review, we always pair our selection with a cocktail that we hope will enhance the viewing experience. This season, we want to focus a little bit more on the cocktail selection, so please feel free to shake, stir, or mix the cocktail that we've chosen and settle in for what we hope will be an engaging review. With that, what movie do we have loading this evening?
Okay, can we stop saying the damn word loading?
It's kind of like pickle.
Mr. Anderson.
Please. Mr. Brandon.
All right, tonight we have our third selection for our 90s films, the revolutionary cyberpunk classic, The Matrix. As we know, 1999 is it is the greatest movie year of all time. Just see seasons 1 and 2 and 4 of Three and a Half Gentlemen. Damn it. And this film is no exception. The Wachowskis' scripted and directed movie is rated an 8.7 on IMDb.
Holy
has
shit.
A critic score of 88% and an audience score of 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. And honestly, it's a little bit lower than I would have expected it. For the audience score. Anyway, the film follows a computer hacker, computer software designer named Anderson.
Thomas Anderson.
AKA, we usually capitalize that, Neo, played by Keanu Reeves, who learns of a secrete.
Were you asleep when you wrote this?
I didn't write it. I pulled it off the internet, which is why it's so bad.
You have three mistypes in literally 8 words.
I was a little drunk.
Anyway.
You should have took the red pill.
He learns of a secret war between machines and the human race. When Morpheus, played by the one, the only Lawrence Fishburne, an elusive figure considered to be the most dangerous man alive, offers Neo answers to the question, what is the Matrix? Neo is plunged and unplugged, into the truth that the world he knows is just a computer simulation. The cast is rounded out by the incomparable Hugo Weaving as Agent Smith, and the sexy and beautiful Trinity, played by Carrie Ann Moss. And may I just say right now that she has only gotten sexier and hotter and more beautiful
and a much
with
better
age.
Actress. Let me just
no,
tell
I'm talking
you.
About no, as
you're talking about Trinity,
I'm talking
right?
about like watching
but
the
you know,
Matrix. She's
you know,
beautiful
help,
in this.
You know what would help you read through that?
Trinity,
to
right?
read if you it read it before the day,
I will do that next time I get it before the day.
Jeremiah, take us through first impressions.
She's really great in a Memento.
She is.
We're talking about Trinity, right?
Oh my God, that one scene. You know what I'm talking about.
Before we get into our cocktail selection, we need to talk about whose film this is, and additionally, what our initial impressions of this movie were before sitting down to watch it. Mm. Since this is Brandon's film because he loves the year of 1999,
I do.
Tell us why you picked this film.
Well, I love 1999 because I started high school in 1999.
No, you didn't.
We're talking about the movie. We both did it.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, we did.
I did not.
We started high school in 1999.
I did not.
We started in the fall of 1999.
I did not.
I oh, yeah, that's right. You're not 03.
Yeah, you're older than I am.
Shit.
Boom, old man.
It's the Matrix.
I like how he's plugged into the Matrix now.
I like how he kept trying to tell me. He's like, no,
look
no.
Look at that black bird outside. Look at that black bird outside. Anyway, let's try that again. Anyway.
Why is there a black cat there?
Oh, my God. Really, is that the same black cat? Is it the same black cat? I don't know. It could be. By the way, no cat would look the exact same, do the same thing if it was the same
The Office
cat.
Did it. So
yeah,
yes.
I was just going to say.
Yes, I have, actually.
It's pretty easy to do.
I am Dorpheus, Morpheus's brother.
And is there Dio outside?
Dio outside.
And then he picks the wrong bill.
So you really
I just got a promotion. I'm really happy.
I
right
own this
now.
Building. You know.
Fuck.
First impressions. Listen, The Matrix was always, it was the cool movie. It was like the movie that I feel like you weren't cool in school. You weren't cool around your friends if you hadn't seen it. And it wasn't a movie that you like reenacted like when you were a kid. And granted, I was in high school when this came out, and I just remember this movie just capturing all the technological advancements, not only just in the story, but in the filming of it. And I remember all these different like specials on TV and like, you know, the news or 2020 was doing like a special on the new CGI technology and filmmaking technology because this movie, you know, and what it did. And to me, I'm going to give a little preview of just like, if we're talking about a revolutionary and influential film in cinema history, I mean, it's The Matrix. It really is.
Cinematographically, it is.
Cinematographically, it is.
Are we
fantastic.
Still talking about first impressions?
Ed, why don't you tell us what your damn first impression is, okay?
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good movie. I mean, Jeremy, you can tell me if I'm wrong. How many times have we watched this movie in the movie theater?
I think we saw this with our father.
Like
19
times.
This is Dad's favorite fucking film.
We saw this movie 19 times. We saw it until it was like it was seriously every day in the summer. So this came out in March 31st.
This came out
1999.
We don't have to do two impressions. We're going to go back and forth on this. This came out 2 months before The Phantom Menace came out. And that was like the big fucking movie of 1999, I remember. Like that was the new Star Wars movie. This came out and almost in a way overshadow it. But I also remember that this was also a controversy of film because Columbine happened around the same time.
20 days later.
And it was like kind of like people are saying like
the
these
trench
kids,
coat,
the trench coat, and everything like that.
Yeah, and especially with the, you know, the building shootout.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hardcore.
Yeah,
whatever
so,
time we watch.
But I remember this movie had a lot of controversy. But at the same time, I remember Eddie and I seeing this movie so many fucking times because Dad, Ed, loved this fucking film.
Yep.
But it was, dude, it was something that we'd never seen before. That's the thing. Never seen anything like that. How it was shot, how it was just like the fight scenes, whatnot. There was nothing like this before.
Yeah.
So I had like 9 VHS tapes to my name in 1999, and this was one of, like,
really?
2000. This was one of them. And I had it on, it was part of my cycle. It was like 3 Star Wars movies, Phantom Menace, like 2 James Bonds, and a Matrix. Like, and I just watched them on repeat. And so that's how I got introduced to this movie. I remember thinking that his glasses, like Neo's sunglasses, were the coolest fucking sunglasses.
And then
known
you saw
to
him
mankind.
Again, right?
And I'm like, oh my God, they're so dated.
The cell phone
it didn't even
was dated,
fit his
dude.
Face.
Well, and I love Morpheus's pants. Anyway, there was a bunch of different elements to this movie that I remember loving, and I was really excited to see these actors. Because they've gone on to do so many different things. Like Hugo Weaving has been synonymous with the Lord
legend,
of the Rings.
Dude.
Yeah. And then you had Carrie Ann Moss, who then has entered the MCU with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and all
Trinity.
That kind of stuff. And then, you know,
Let's talk about Reeves.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves, who looks exactly the same. But what my
what movie was he in? We did one of his.
I think it was Point Break.
Oh, shit, movie. Can't remember.
John
now.
Wick. Talk shit about
John
him.
Wick.
He is John Wick. He
John
is now
Wick.
Officially John Wick.
Now they're making Matrix 4.
Well, should be coming out in a month, actually.
They also made a Bill and Ted's 3.
Hey, that was pretty good.
Was it? I didn't see it.
No, I didn't see it.
Me neither.
anyway, Eddie, take us through the cocktail.
As we mentioned earlier, with each movie, try to pair the tone, feel, and overall impact of the story of A Cocktail. This season, we really want to discuss The Cocktail and more, and how it leads up to the movie selection. Everyone who listens knows that when we finally watch a Bond movie...
In one more month.
Let me just go ahead and say this real quick. Everyone who listens to this knows months. That we
Unless
did...
Unless the fucking Delta strain gets us again.
We will pair.
Ain't funny shit.
We will pair. Everyone knows that we dangle this carrot of James Bond,
Stay
but it's never going to happen.
We'll on target. You're too close.
We will pair it with a vodka martini, shaking that stir of a lemon peel. I'm so over.
Cannot wait.
Do you want me to change your part, bro?
Yes.
Can
no,
we?
No.
But tonight's cocktail was chosen by.
We're gonna, after we have the lemon peel.
Jesus, yes. He's going to have to change the script. You're going to have to stop using copy paste.
But tonight's cocktail. Actually, I really liked my. Part I really mastered
Bro,
my part a little bit.
I know, and then
but tonight's cocktail is chosen by Brandon. Do. So Brandon, take us through the cocktail.
Just think of what Sean's gonna have to do. He's gonna have to come up with a whole little paragraph.
Do you know how hard
it
was to get rid of the blue milk of Tatooine?
Oh God, the blue Sean, milk of Tatooine was on every
on
script.
Stay on target.
Every
Brandon,
script
cocktail.
For a whole season.
Big movie cocktail.
To capture the neon green text of the Matrix code, I decided on the bullet dodging sour. It's a sweet drink, but it's got a bite, kind of like the Matrix. It all seems to check out, but there's just something more happening beneath the surface. And then you're drunk, and then you're asleep on the couch.
This is a Brandon drink, I feel.
It is, very much. To make this cocktail, you need Midori liqueur, sweet and sour mix, vodka, a splash of Sprite, which, if you are keeping score, is a Midori sour. And then you're going to add just a literal drop of Jaeger, spelled literally with a Y instead of a J.
That's
it should
the
be
Matrix.
Jagger. Well, that's okay. Well, that's just his script writing. Enjoy it, but watch out for any glitches like two black cats, an extra drink you don't remember making, or Agent Smith standing right behind you. Eddie's right behind you. Okay.
For the record, Eddie did not look.
Not even close. Didn't even flinch. I would have flinched. Apparently, you have not had enough bullet dodging sour.
The only person behind him is David.
Who?
That's why I would have survived Agent Smith.
Yeah, well, you would be dead first by Michael Myers, but fuck that. For a complete recipe,
Stop
visit our
you.
Website
That's all I need
at thegentlemanpodcast.com or on Instagram at the.gentlemanpodcast. At the.gentlemanpodcast. I just want to be more like Sean by saying everything twice.
The dot means a lot.
All right, yeah. So let's start it off the year 1999. I mean... Is it probably one of the best
American
years,
Pie?
Best years of movies of all time?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys.
1,000%.
So I want to talk about the opening scene of this movie because I think that part of...
With the phone call, the DOS...
Carrie-Anne Moss's escape.
Oh, my God.
I think that this sets up, in so many ways, it sets up kind of a slow burn of a movie because
yes.
You have this huge action sequence where she's running away from the agents. You really don't know what the fuck's going on. You know that she's in this wonderfully... underworldish cat suit and
very leathery
best
it's
part.
Actually like pleathery
it is very pleathery.
Which he jumped up like
Sean
a
has
crunchy
a,
tiger
a
hidden
upstairs?
Dragon move
I do
before yeah, before the hidden dragon this
yeah she,
is all
she jumped up she jumped up like in this weird like Karate Kid and like move in the sky slow motion
and the music the sound the woo, the slow motion the you had this feel this tone of the movie that was unlike anything anyone had ever seen on screen.
I think it's one of the best opening sequence to an open up
agreed,
a film.
Agreed.
You know, I think it's one of the best opening sequence film ever, dude.
So
seriously.
I want to jump off of that because it had been probably even though this was my pick, it had been probably 10 years since I've seen this one. And two things kind of jumped out at me. Number one, it was a
By
lot.
Way, this Midori sour. With the Jaeger is we haven't talked about.
We have not clicked. We just
so
been drinking.
Good.
It's very sweet
it's
and it's
so
very perfection
and beautiful. And I just
I need more Sprite.
This is literally
too sour.
We do need some more Sprite.
It's too
is
sour.
The drink to drink.
You
want to
go
way.
Ahead? And
I would rate this like very high on our
list. Well,
I mean,
really,
Midori
low.
Sour is pretty good. This is not golf.
Really, very low.
Okay, you know, screw you. Anyway, this movie, was watching it again, and kind of looking at it again, analyzing it again. It's less action-packed throughout than I remember it being. Like, there's some lulls, for sure. The other thing I kind of was surprised about is that it's really vague. Like, it doesn't give you a whole lot of exposition. There's not a whole lot of character development. And that's, I think, because, you know, thinking about it, I've got all the understanding of it because I've seen one a million times. I've seen two and three, unfortunately, once each. That I know kind of the characters and what their purpose is. But if you're watching it for the first time, you really don't know what's going in. You're going in kind of blind, and they just kind of say, just trust us. I mean, it's a whole hour in before we get any kind of
and
description
sort of
what the Matrix
it's
is.
It's sort of jarring the way they go in and out, and you don't really know what's happening. Like, mm-hmm. Trinity has this whole escape, and then she gets hit by the semi-truck. Mm-hmm. You really don't know what's going on until mm-hmm. she shows up again mm-hmm. at the club.
Well, let's talk about it. This would not be made nowadays. Why? We have no landlines and payphones.
I was actually thinking, I was like, oh God, the hard line. There's no hard line left.
Nope,
there's
no hard line.
I need a hard line. I need a hard line. Okay, we have to travel to 25. Wizard,
get me the hell out of here.
25 blocks, and then you have to go into that payphone. No, those ones
I'm
don't
sure
work.
They're gonna
those ones don't work.
This is Mendoza's
okay?
third floor apartment.
Yeah. It's like, watch, Matrix 4, they're going to be back in 1999.
They're going to have to be.
That would be fucking dope.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, the new hardware didn't get a fucking update or anything like
well,
that.
Well, and what they could say is, paused, you know, the machine started eliminating the payphones.
Ooh, I like it. Ooh, that's how
oh
it is.
Oh, my God. So
you hear
meta.
That, Wachowskis?
That's meta.
I like it.
All right, so let's talk for a minute about Hugo Weaving and instantaneous. He instantaneously brought a sense of dread to the villain.
So another thing, with him... I think Hugo Weaving, he's been in so many different things. I think a lot of people will think of him as Elrond from The Lord of the Rings, and obviously that's a great role, and he does a great job in it. He will always be Agent Smith. I don't care what amazing things he does, and he's done a lot. He's always made Agent Smith. This is his role, and it's so perfect. But what I was interested in thinking, watching it again, is that he is just kind of like one of the three. He's not really the main one. He's just kind of one of the three, and he does make a couple kind of decisions for the group, but really he's also told what to do by some of the others. So I think it's kind of
I think he's actually like,
in their minds we made him more, I guess, more powerful than he actually is.
Yeah, but you can see how powerful he is because he's actually kind of like walking away from whatever like hardware system that he is and whatnot, mm-hmm. like a virus and whatnot.
So at the end of the movie, and I'm jumping way ahead here, but this is I have literally so many questions, and this is not to say that this is a bad movie or at all, but it does raise a lot of questions on continuity and just the world building and everything. But he is talking to Morpheus, and he says how much he hates this world and how much he wants to get out of this world. But isn't he a product of the world? Like, how can he break out of it? And then, granted, this might be answered in 2 and 3, but it's, I hated it
I
so much, and I couldn't remember 2 and 3 at all.
I don't believe it is, but here's what I got from it, is that basically in order to preserve – so I'm looking at it from a 30,000 foot view. In order to preserve mankind there. As a food source, they put all mankind into the Matrix to give mm-hmm. them a sense of purpose and to keep them alive. Because if they didn't,
but why
they
not just put them in a coma?
I think that
is
that's basically what they did.
Oh, I know, but they give them these because dreams and these thoughts.
Because my guess is that a lot of their energy,
well,
synaptic electric energy, comes from
the
their
stimulation.
Brain stimulation.
And, yeah, that's good.
But this
also,
is all supposition. I don't know this for a fact.
Also, what do you know? How do you know in the coma? Like, what do you know?
What they're dreaming about.
They could be actually doing the same thing. You don't know when you're in the coma.
I mean, so hold on. So in answer to your question, the way I read it was is that some of the machines got shit jobs and they have to oversee what's going on in the Matrix. So he's stuck in this virtual reality where he could be out doing other things, but he got like, he's like janitor number 4.
I was like security guard.
On a staff
guard.
Of 50.
I was so thinking like security, security guard. Security guard for the high school.
But if the Matrix shuts down, what does he do? Does he have an entity out in the real world?
I would think yes. He would be a machine in the real world, yes.
It explains it on Matrix 2 and 3. He actually gets out.
I can't even remember 2 and 3.
He gets out?
Yeah, yes. He becomes a real person. Two. He actually is able to get himself into a person, you know, and that he actually hosting a person outside of the Matrix.
I just remember get to
Zion.
Okay,
I need to watch those two again, apparently.
Don't get to Zion.
It's fucking horrible.
I know there's a lot of theories out there mm-hmm. and down the, you know, in other movies that Agent Smith is actually the chosen one. He's actually mm-hmm. the one.
That is a theory, yeah.
Right, and it made sense, too, because... Neo is actually the glitch.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's keep it to this movie.
I know, but
No. I'm not diminishing what you just said.
Because honestly, Ed just said applies this movie.
I understand. I'm just saying.
Let's follow the right rabbit.
But I like that concept. Not like I'm ignoring 2 and 3. I'm just
which we should.
Closing that out. And I'm saying that, Ed, to your point, if Mr. Smith, Agent Smith, is the chosen one. and Neo is the glitch.
Then what the hell is Oracle doing?
Then what? Yeah, what is the Oracle doing?
Oracle. Is Neo okay? Well, I think maybe that's a good question. Is Neo the chosen one?
We'll probably get more of an explanation on Matrix
the,
4.
The Oracle actually said no.
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. So she said no, but then we get the idea that she said what he needed to hear.
Yes.
Because obviously when he does exactly destroy Smith at the end, which we're going to get to, but is the stupidest part of the whole thing.
Okay, well, listen, guys. But, his name is Neo. It's an anagram to the one.
Right, but it's also new. He's new.
But no, Neo, one.
Backwards, yeah. Yes. We understand.
So, okay, yeah.
Almost. Yeah.
He's the one.
For sure.
Not backwards. I know what I mean. The words, you're switching around. Yes.
It's an anagram.
I'm just saying, he's the one.
It's a mirror. God damn what I was going to say.
Okay, so hold on. Back up for a minute. So we've got Keanu Reeves, who's basically a computer programmer hacker. Okay?
Damn, he said the one.
Thomas Anderson.
Computer programmer hacker. He's clearly knowledgeable about what's going on in the background, like on the Silk Road, on the dark web, if you will.
Very dark web.
Because he knows Trinity by name. He knows
all the hackers.
He knows that there's something going on, and he's curious about the next thing.
Does Trinity reach out to him?
Well, but if you look at the agents, right after Trinity escapes or gets hit by the truck or whatever you want to call it,
she escapes.
The agents talk about there's something that's happened, and there's like they recognize that there's an anomaly going on in their program. The question I have is the anomaly Neo? Or does Neo help the anomaly?
Well, it goes back to the whole vase question, right? Would you have knocked that over if you hadn't known about it?
But if
it really is a chicken or egg situation. Is
the Force Awakens?
If they hadn't been tracking him,
Neo is a Force. Something has awakened in the balance of a level.
But I guess
if the agents weren't tracking him, would he have
that's
even
not my
broken?
Question.
That's not your question.
My question is: okay, is the anomaly clear. A program problem, and Neo is the one who exploits the problem, or is Neo actually the problem?
I think he actually stumbled upon it, and that's why he's the one.
I think he's at the actual problem.
So he is the defective code.
I think so.
As opposed to he finds a defective code and exploits the defective code.
If he is the defective code, he also found it. And he was sleeping this whole time.
He is able to do things that are abnormal to human, such as the end, which is
stupid,
where
he
flies.
As soon
as
he
got, move that fast.
As soon as he got unplugged, he was able to just catch on real fast. Mm-hmm. Faster than most.
Yeah, it reminds me of Rey, and I know that's a silly, but it reminds me of Rey that she is able to harness the Force without any kind of training.
Very small training.
Neo has had barely any training. He's got a jiu-jitsu.
I know kung fu.
Right, that's it,
yeah. For 10 hours straight, but he learned.
You can see the code, actually, when he's getting his ass chewed up by his boss, and the guy's like washing the windows and whatnot. You can see like the code, like, you know, following Neo, actually.
And what the whole point, And the whole point of the one is that he is able to change the Matrix at whim, mm-hmm. right? And that's what he does. When he flies, I think it's poorly shot, but when he flies at the end, I think that's so important because it's showing that he is able to bend, break, but definitely bend the Matrix to his
whim. It also shows when he does the movement. We're still jumping, and he moves around. Even practicing,
he's able to stop
with
time.
Morpheus. He's able to just move a little faster than Morpheus. Even
and then before. He dies and comes back. I mean, we got to remember that.
And so he skipped a bullet. Yeah,
so is he the anomalous code that allows him? Like, is he the virus that infects the Matrix, and allows him to implement his will on other programs?
1,000%.
And so he's the virus.
And that's why Morpheus and Trinity are trying to find this person. They know it's out there somewhere because it's been read to them that there's going to be a virus. They just need to find the virus.
So I'm trying to conceptualize this movie because it's so easy to suggest that the Matrix is the fake reality and then the other one is the real reality. And it's almost like, what if it was flipped?
I see, and the agents are the virus, and they're the ones trying to protect it.
No, Matrix world is the real world, and the quote unquote real world with the plugs in the back of the head and all that.
Saw that in Black Mirror season 3. Yeah,
yeah. Is that actually, you know, did he actually get plugged into that world?
It never says anything about it, but I can see what you're talking about. Like, it could actually, like, you know, flip itself in that particular way. But it never really dives deep.
No.
But you can actually see why Agent Smith might have that, you know, kind of that urge to get back into whatever, not the Matrix, and get back to whatever world that he wants to be in.
Because Joe Pantoliano, what was his name? Cypher.
Cypher.
He had a comment where he's having dinner with, I think it was Agent Smith.
Yeah.
And he says, I know that the steak is just fake. It's just code.
It's in my head, yeah.
And I know the wine is code, but he eats it and he drinks it and he experiences this pleasure.
Euphoria, yeah.
So the question, and Morpheus asks this question, what is reality, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's what this movie successfully asks, yeah. is what is reality?
Yeah, when you're dreaming, sometimes you don't know you're dreaming.
Right.
Right? So sometimes you can actually fall into deep sleep and really think you're in living reality, you know?
So it brings me to a reasonable question. Which pill would you take?
Exactly. Oh, my God. That's literally right here. I was going to ask you. yeah, I think it goes back to that idea of is complete ignorance complete bliss? You know, and that's what Cypher wants. He wants that ignorance again. And I totally understand that. Like, if I knew that there were puppeteers pulling all of our strings... Would I want to know that, or would I want to just be a puppet and be completely oblivious to it?
I would take the blue pill in a fucking heartbeat.
Wait, which one's the blue pill?
Fucking the Matrix. To get out of there. I would be in the Matrix in a heartbeat.
Oh, you would
fuck the real world. Fuck live in the sewers. Fuck these robots, you know, spiders and things like that. I would just I want the steak. I want the wine.
He wants that red girl in the dress.
I want to be someone important. I want to be rich.
Eddie, what pill would you take?
It depends where I'm at the moment. Honestly, I'm like Dwight. You know, I just got a raise. I own this building now. I'm gonna take the blue pill. I don't. What's with the blue pill? Anyone? Don't take the blue pill. It really depends where I'm at.
Like, if anyone has put something bad in this blue pill, please tell me.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of Keanu Reeves in this movie, man? This was kind of like the second coming of Keanu Reeves in the late '90s. I mean, the mid '90s, he kind of had like some misses and whatnot.
Speed.
Early '90s. Early '90s.
That was what, 96?
94.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, this was kind of like the next part of his career. What do you think?
I think this propelled him into the action star that he is. I think before he was kind of
seen... had speed. He had speed.
But Speed was... He was not good in Speed.
Yes, he was.
Was he good in this?
Jeez. I think he was... I think, first of all...
I love Keanu Reeves.
Keanu
doesn't
Reeves
look like you do. Everything he's been in, you've been dogging.
No, dude, he was fucking dope. He's a terrible actor, in this movie. But he is such a great person, and I love
him. You're a terrible
him.
Actor.
That's good. I don't act.
I see why.
You're all welcome.
So
I see why.
For me, Keanu Reeves has
don't talk about
not
John Wick
changed.
That way.
He has not changed tremendously from the time he was,
in Point Break.
In Point Break to the time he is today. Now, I have not seen the John Wick movies. I'm going to watch the John Wick movies, but he's still the same smooth actor. And this is the thing, like there are certain people on screen that I enjoy watching, even if they're not the most magnificent, complex actors out
Nicolas
there.
Cage.
And Nicolas Cage is one of them. I will watch Nicolas Cage because he's easy and simple to watch.
And Keanu
it's
Reeves
not
thing,
complicated.
Yeah.
It's just, you get what you get. Keanu Reeves is the same way. Like Robert Redford, Meryl Streep. These people have complex performances that are, you never know what you're going to get. It's always going to be deep and wonderful, but it's like Daniel Day-Lewis is the same way.
Just want to watch a movie.
I just kind of sometimes just want to have a kick-ass ride. Like
can we
Armageddon.
Talk about, I know you guys
2 weeks
can't see
ago.
It, but
it's like it's just fun to watch.
So he's battling, he's sparring with Morpheus, and he's got dust all over him. And then Morpheus is like, "You done?" And then Neo does one of these like, "Ha!" God, it was the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
That was actually a real karate
that
move.
That was terrible. He's just like, "I'm King Kong."
I
over
don't
here.
Agree with you. That was a karate.
That
move.
That was a karate
magnificent.
Move.
Magnificent.
What's wrong with you?
The dojo sequence.
I don't wear a belt.
That whole dojo sequence was truly
did
amazing.
Did it not go shorter, though, now that you watched it?
I wanted it longer. I wanted it longer.
But it was longer in my mind than it was watching it.
He can only
it
do so much because I believe he actually fucked up his back. And so they only were able to actually record a few of those
remember
scenes.
It
the whole,
so
the whole scene of the dojo sequence
was
a training exercise of pretty much showing he knew, Morpheus knew he was going to fuck up Neil. He was, everything was teaching
but
moment.
But then
like,
when he
hey,
got super
me,
fast
instead of
that one
me.
Time.
He saw that fear, like, oh, shit.
And then as soon as that happened, he's like, take us to the jump.
I want you to hit me as hard as you can. Isn't that what he says?
That's Fight Club, dude.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway. Which is, by the way, a great
stop trying to hit
movie.
Me and hit me. He said, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Okay, just a little
when he's
fun
punching
fact
himself
here.
In the,
little
in the parking
fun fact.
Is that
little fun fact. Okay, so Keanu Reeves' stunt double in The Matrix was this actor, or just stunt double, sorry, Chad, I can't say his last name, Stan Risky. Sorry, I didn't say it right. He actually is the one who actually created, wrote, and direct John Wick.
Oh, oh okay.
So how
that's
that
pretty cool.
fucking full circle comes around, man.
That's pretty cool.
So here's the thing that I know that you, Brandon, you're going to joke about it, but
yes.
I was amazed at how, first of all, how short of time Morpheus spent with Keanu, with Neo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was not very long. But no. The time they had together, like, if you think about this, it was a fast, explosive moment at the beginning with Trinity. Then Neo goes through this process of becoming unplugged, right?
Mm-hmm. And then rebirth, yeah, the rebirth.
And then the birthing scene.
And then, like, 45 minutes later, you have the dojo scene.
Yeah.
And the dojo scene was probably 8 minutes mm-hmm. of really intense talk and kind of really cool fighting. You didn't have another big fight until
the very end.
Well, you had the escape in the toilet, but then all the like yeah. at the very end of the movie, you had the most incredible action sequence ever.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, this is a long movie without action.
It's a long movie, and I would say that the pacing is not. It's not good, but it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't bother you.
Yeah, it's a weird time where I think if another movie took this pacing, especially if it's calling itself an action movie, and that's what The Matrix is, if another action movie did the same pacing, I think that it would have been bad. But because the story is so complex, because it's a mind fuck of a movie and story, I think that we're so interested in finding out like what's really going on that the lulls are still full of us being on our edge of our seat, like wondering what's going to happen. I think that's the way they get away from it.
I remember like watching it the first time when they're walking through after the dojo and after the jump scene, they're walking through the town. I think it's like a city and they're like, and Morpheus is talking and
woman in red,
and there's
yeah.
and there's everyone bumping him. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time watching that, you didn't know it was in the Matrix.
No. Yeah.
Until you saw the girl walk past.
Girl in the red dress.
And then, were you focusing on me or were you focusing on the girl in the red dress? Now look at the girl in the red dress.
You want some death sticks?
And he looks again, and it's Agent Smith,
yeah.
and it pauses. That was a cool scene because you're instantly, so cool. all of a sudden after that, it was just like, oh,
you don't know where you're at.
You have no idea where you're mm-hmm. at. Like I know the other two times is like, okay, you're in the jump scene and then you're in the dojo and that's all practice.
Mm-hmm.
That other scene, I really thought they were back in the Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they're still in the practice. They're still training.
Yeah.
Did you notice that in that simulation? With the red dress, most of them are actually twins in that scene.
I had no idea.
So it's like you can tell that they are in some type of in the copies of the Matrix. Yeah. Oh, like that's pretty cool. Fucking cool.
I like how Mouse also was aside. You want the girl in the red dress?
Do you want some death sticks?
I don't want your death sticks.
So I want.
Sorry, Attack of the Clones. That was the guy.
I wanted to bring up though one of the scenes that always stuck out to me in like a creepy crawly way, and I don't watch a whole lot of horror movies. But this is one that gave me just like an uncomfortable vibe. Is the birthing scene?
Oh no!
The mouth covered. No. The mouth, but then the birthing scene. It always just
popping off these.
The way it's just shot with here, he's just slimy and he's bald and
it was creepy.
It was creepy. It really.
So my question is, how long of time passed between the birthing scene mm-hmm. and when he was on the Nebuchadnezzar?
Oh, that's easy. This much hair.
No. If you see in the beginning of the movie, it's actually sometime like it was 1998, and then it shows like the date of 1999. So it was actually about, I think, 16 months or something shit like that.
So it definitely took him like almost over a year to get strength enough to go. Because that whole, like, when he comes out of the Matrix and then he goes down that weird-ass tube and then gets picked up by the Nebuchadnezzar.
Because he actually goes into the real world because that little machine saw him wake up. And that's what there's like, he's a defect. Throw him down. They usually die. But the Nebuchadnezzar was able to actually locate him.
Oh, dude. Fuck. I didn't know that, bro. Cool.
Yeah. So the machine throws away the defects.
But then they had to do like surgery on him and get him prepared because they had to reconstitute his muscles and go through all that process.
The needles in him and everything.
I know. It was creepy. And I will say this. We've talked a lot about directors. We've talked a lot about Steven Spielberg on this podcast. A lot about Scorsese and De Palma. And
not enough about Chris Nolan.
But the Wachowskis have this feel to their movies that is
and shows
harsh and raw, but at the same time very vulnerable.
And
like
I don't think I can recommend a show more than Sense8.
I've not
Sense8
seen that.
If you have not, it is the Wachowskis. I don't even know how.
I wish that they had three more seasons because I think they could have expanded on their
story. It is on Netflix.
Line.
It is worth watching.
It was too big. It was too intense of a show to continue. Mm-hmm.
Because you're watching, you go like, "This is so Matrix."
But it was basically nine people, eight. Fuck yeah, sorry, eight people connected with their minds, and it was so magnificent.
What do you think about the fighting scenes and whatnot? How it kind of was like a revolutionary in a way where you never saw people in those type of, what is it called, wirefu, like kung fu, but it's like in wire, like, you know, ways.
Well, I mean, you got the, so you got
wirefu?
Well, you've got,
wirefu or something.
Was
like
this
that,
before Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? Mm-hmm.
So I think you've got to look at the fight scenes two different ways. One is just literally the visual representation or visual style, I guess. So you've got the martial arts meets the shootout, right? It's this kind of cool.
This is anime.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's
anime.
It's this cool amalgamation of it. But then you have the filming of it.
Yeah, from a
cinematographically speaking.
So from a cinematography standpoint, they did things that you've never seen before. Like a bullet would be shot and they would literally move the camera as the bullet was moving.
Take five different angles.
Yeah, let's rotate. And even early on, when they were just introducing characters, they rotated the camera and it's almost like time didn't matter in the movie.
It was bendable to these people because they were from outside.
Right, they were capturing the moment at their pace, not the pace of reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that was an important distraction from the tone and the speed of the movie, the pacing, because you were able to kind of not know how long things took because they slowed down the fight scenes. They slowed down the bullet scenes. And then they sped up things.
Well, just look at it this way. For me, I looked at it. So the CGI is so classic and important because it's been parodied and copied so many times. Everything from, I'm thinking Shrek, right? They parody Shrek. She jumps up and stops in a twirl.
Charlie's Angel.
But then we get to, I'm going to go ahead and go there, Zack Snyder. Right, Zack Snyder with this idea of let's slow down the film and then speed it up really fast. Right, it's so iconic because it's been captured. And it's that same thing of if imitation is the finest form of flattery. Right, this movie has so much impact on cinema and what action cinema has become even to today. I think
they melded traditions and they melded styles from other countries better than most filmmakers would.
And that's to give to the Wachowskis, not to keep talking about Sense8, but it's people all over the world. And so you have these different cultural
influences.
I feel like they brought in an
element of Japanese cinematography that has really permeated the way that films have been made since 1999. Even insofar as to say like a show like Westworld, where I feel the Wachowskis' influence on that show. And it's almost like they took it to another level. I don't know if you've seen that show.
I've seen the first season. I didn't get the chance to see the second season. Man.
It's really a quite a good show. But what that show I feel like did is they took the hero's journey from the old Japanese cinema and then made it a Western within a futuristic technology. It's the same concept as Matrix, not really, but it has a lot of the same elements of what's reality, what's not reality.
Machines,
and it makes you
AI,
question
that. What is the villain? Is it like AI? Is it, you know,
in what?
In Matrix.
It says it's AI.
It's AI.
AI.
So
took
is it
over.
The same premise as fucking Terminator? I mean, did they kind
of kind of. Yeah. Only so
you don't,
just
you don't
a,
know
another
the downfall
world that instead of it being the future, it's another world entirely. Right?
Like, I feel like they gave birth to AI or something like that and somehow it found its way or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So well, it realized so in this movie basically, mankind fought AI, and they thought by destroying the power source, the sun, they would eliminate AI. And then AI turned from using the sun as their power source to using humans as their power source. That's the concept of this movie.
I know, like, I think it's Tank and Apoch.
Yeah.
Right? They're right. Dozer. So they originally from the original Dozer. World, right? That's what they said, that they're the two brothers. That they're originally, I think it's
Tank
Apoch.
And Dozer.
Tank and Dozer,
yeah.
Apoch and Switch were like
the other, yeah. Were normal. So the two brothers, they were we're from this world. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a difference of they were never in the Matrix.
They were products of Zion.
Gotcha.
That showed me that I had questions of like, well, how are the babies created then in the Matrix? Mm-hmm. I just wish they had more. Like,
they have fields of them. That's the thing. Artificial insemination. You can.
So overall, if you think about it, they're also AI.
Well, no. Because
AI is artificial intelligence. They're artificial insemination. They're creating.
But
the
test tube baby nowadays. Still a human.
But, it was created by the machine.
So it's just created by machines. They're using human DNA. Yeah.
But if we go to a movie like Gattaca, which I love, and someday I'll talk them into us doing, it's this idea of the faith birth, right?
Is that where Bear Beats?
No, that's In Time. That
movie came out a year before this
Gattaca.
One, actually.
Gattaca is amazing. Gattaca is one of those movies that people don't really.
That's a hidden gem. So maybe I'll talk Sean into allowing it because he is the host and he decides everything for us.
Absolutely, I am. So my
he is the architect.
He is the oracle. My biggest issue with this movie is that people always say that Dark City is like this is a ripoff of Dark City. Has anyone and
Have you seen Dark City?
I have. Okay. It's very not like this at all. But what they did is they used some of the same scenes or sets. Sets from Dark City in this movie. I think it's a bad rap. I don't think that this is a rip-off.
It's two
of
different
much.
Stories. Maybe that it has that gothic vibe to it.
It definitely
and
does.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. It is not the same fucking movie. It's a whole different great movie. If you guys get a chance to watch this, Dark City. It's a really good fucking film.
It is. It's very good. I mean, it's one of those movies that is, to me, it's hard to get into, but once you get into it, it's fine. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think the Wachowskis did very successfully and the reason why this movie broke so many barriers and was good was because they created a likable character in Neo who was confused. And there's no one
us.
Who plays confused better than Keanu Reeves.
But you also have Trinity where you have this badass sidekick.
Right.
You know, that just
and you know,
I don't want to say broke the barriers, but, you know, she, you know, in the whole movie, she's fucking badass.
Well,
one
of my favorite lines and parts of this movie, and I still remember it, you know, seeing it for the first time in theaters, is when Neo looks over and is like, "Do you know how to fly that?" And she's like, "Not yet." And then she's like, "Now I do." Like, I mean, it breaks the rules so beautifully.
You also, I mean, speaking of breaking the rules, you also had breaking gender barriers in that she kissed him and brought him back to life, unlike Sleeping Beauty, who is the prince bringing Sleeping Beauty back to life.
Yeah.
And
it takes a lot of fairy tales, too, like Alice in Wonderland, which I know is not a fairy tale.
Down the rabbit hole.
Down the rabbit hole. You've got a couple other mentions of it. I thought it was fantastic. One thing we didn't talk about, but I think that we do need to talk about, is historically how important this movie coming out in 1999 was. It's because literally a couple months later, we had the whole Y2K scare. And I don't know if you guys remember how intense that thing was, but like people thought the world was going to end because of computers.
You thought it was intense. It was that intense.
They thought all computers were
it was intense.
Oh my God, it's going to be 00.
It's going to be 00 and everybody's going to freak out.
It was like
in
the back of everyone's mind. I mean, I don't know if it was yours, you know.
It was not in mine.
But
it was. Go ahead and write in and tell Sean, email us.
I've been a Bank of America member since 1992, bro.
Let me just go ahead and say, if you feel that Y2K was an actual scare, then please let us know. And if you think that I'm full of shit, well, go ahead and let me know.
Well, we're going to get 900 emails now.
So,
that's good. Thank you.
So when Morpheus got caught, you know, Morpheus knew.
He sacrificed himself.
He knew he was his thing was supposed to protect the Chosen One. And then, you know, Neo was supposed to like be the Chosen One. And then he had to go back to, my job is to protect Morpheus also. I love how they were able to, like, we need weapons. And then you just saw... Okay, and then, like, that whole net scene was pretty cool because now all of a sudden Neo told Trinity, like, hey, I'm not the Chosen One, but Trinity's... You kind of had an idea from Trinity saying, well, I'm going to be in love with the person who's the Chosen One. I'm kind of in love with you right now.
But here's the question, right? If the Oracle tells people what they need to hear, then maybe she just told Morpheus that he was going to find him because he needed to hear that. And maybe he just told Trinity.
That's why I think he's not the Chosen One. I think
in 2
anomaly.
And 3, didn't they kind of show that he's not the one?
I think there's an anomaly in the Matrix which allows Keanu or Neo to exploit that anomaly, and it needs to be the right person to exploit the anomaly.
But then in that case, he is the one. He
right.
Is,
so, you, I mean, in a roundabout way, sure, he is. But at the same time, I don't think he's the one that is manipulating the Matrix. I think if you believe,
if you believe, and that's why he does it. He goes, because I believe I can get him out.
Oh my God!
Right.
Let's just go to the end though. When he's fighting Smith,
I want to talk about. Hold on, the greatest gun battle in movie cinematic
history. Greatest thing
when they go in through the metal detectors and they have like Eddie said a gazillion guns,
and that first guy. He's like, do you have anything on you? And he just shows it to him.
Yeah.
You just imagine the fear in that guy's eyes. This is like, what?
I mean, he was just ones and zeros.
Hey bro.
And I think that...
He's like, hey, bro, I'm also in the Matrix. Like, but I don't know what's going on.
Interesting is they're able to get away from this. You mentioned Columbine, and I remember when that was hitting the news. Is like they're talking about pulling this from theaters. Because
it was 4/20 on 1999.
Yeah, it was a major, major moment. But the way they set it up in this movie is that when they shoot these guards, it's not really like shooting people. It's more like shooting what the agents are.
It was
right?
definitely it's comic the, booky.
It was comic booky.
Yeah.
It wasn't. I mean, it was mass murder, but at the same time, it didn't feel like it.
Don't get me wrong, but it's still
the whole trench coat
when
thing.
You're watching it, I mean, yeah. the shootout scene, it's fucking crazy.
It's hardcore,
but
bro.
A little terrifying at the same time.
Oh, it's
time.
Terrifying.
They walked in, they started shooting the place.
It's just like, dude, and they were just doing these crazy cartwheels, fucking shooting guns, and the music's like, you know, you're like, what the fuck?
I don't want to keep comparing Columbine with it, but there wasn't. I mean, this. Was a big breaking point of that, and I don't. Yeah. I hate saying that because
violence in movies versus real life.
Versus
yeah.
real life,
and
it's
and
sad.
I'm
no.
gonna keep going back to the same thing, which is I don't think that
it happened
you can
20
draw
days
the,
later.
You can draw the correlation between cinema and music and violence. If it, you know, you're using it as an excuse. If these kids are gonna be violent, they're gonna be violent. They don't need a movie to push them over the edge. I'm
they
sorry.
Dressed up just like him.
Okay, well. So the what about the person who infiltrated Aurora for the Dark Knight? Is it because he thought he was Batman? I mean, at what point do you
that
just apportion blame to people being shitty
exactly.
people?
Exactly, but sometimes things influence them, the mentally
well, no,
ill
you can
at
absolutely
times.
Be influenced.
That's
yeah,
what happened.
Yeah. That's
it's going to happen either way if it's a mentally ill person. And it just shows you a mentally ill person when they watch this.
So
definitely
so
affected
I am like an anti-censor. Person. I don't believe in censoring. I think that censorship is literally a horrible thing because I believe in artistic creation and artistic freedom. And I think that what we have to understand is that no, video games don't make, and I'm not a psychologist, so don't yell at me for this. In my opinion, video games don't make somebody violent. I do believe that video games, violent movies like this, it does make violent people more violent. So you cannot put the blame on film or video games or music at all.
So I'm not going to say that it makes them more violent because I don't think that's true, but I do think that
I think it's true,
makes it more
it allows them in their minds
it makes it accessible, which means
it does make it more violent.
It becomes cool.
Means that they're going to find that justification regardless of what they
say. Oh, absolutely. No.
So
we're on the,
you can't pinpoint a particular
this is you and this is me on the same page.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I understand that. I'm saying you can't pinpoint a particular activity and suggest this activity contributes to mass shootings. Like you can't
absolutely
you can't draw the line because the line may exist in some situations.
No,
that's
absolutely no, and I agree with you
because yeah. they could have seen a Scooby-Doo
cartoon.
Like,
I agree with you guys 100% on this whole topic and everything like that. I'm just saying when I'm seeing this for this as an adult, I'm like, mm-hmm. oh fuck yo. You just see it in a different light sometimes. That's it.
Yeah. It happened 20 days later.
Yeah,
I mean, which was close for me.
Well, but here's the other thing, and I don't want this to go continue on. They purchased the guns before 20 yeah. days, you know, and so we have to look at
that's
that.
That's what I was saying. It was not happening either way.
Yeah, you're drawing an equivalency.
This I was just putting over the edge.
No, I get that.
So I do have a serious question.
Let's talk about the helicopter scene.
Because we were talking about Agent Smith, and there was something else I wanted to ask about the agents and see what you guys' opinion was, and that is. Something that bothers me and see if it bothers you is that, okay, so at the beginning they show up at Mr. Anderson's work and, you know, he looks over the cubicle and he sees him pointing and then he hides in the next cubicle over and the agents who apparently can control everything in the Matrix and kind of see everything. How do they not see him? How do they not know where he's at? How come the agents aren't able to hack and know where everybody
because they
is?
See, they do through people, so they can see what other people say. At the very end, you had the.
They use people's eyesight
right. so
as a video camera.
So you had the homeless guy sitting there, and he became
the
homeless
train,
guy.
In the train.
Saw them
in the train because he saw him. So nobody actually saw Neo run into the cubicle.
I like playing footsies with Eddie.
Which brings us to the helicopter scene.
Okay, so the helicopter scene.
I mean, seriously, two parts of that movie. This is where I'm just like. Fuck! Even till today, that shit holds up.
There's one shot where it doesn't, but everything
there's two shots within the helicopter scene that to me are the most iconic scenes of the movie that I will always remember.
The jump,
and then when Trinity comes down,
she knows
it's
she's
the
crashing.
Most beautiful scene in the world. Yes. She's falling. You're watching her from the inside of the glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, inside
she's
the building.
She's falling. The building is exploding.
But
and
it
then,
ripples the way it ripples.
Right.
Oh,
and then
my
she
God.
Creates this circle break on the glass from where she collides with the glass. Like, that is The Matrix to me. That is one of the Matrix scenes.
Even the gun shootout scene. When he's actually finally doing like Trinity help, and he stops for the first time, but he's slowing.
And he does the bullet dodge.
That fucking scene still holds up.
Holds up.
There is like 25 minutes from 25 minutes to the end of the movie.
Yes.
This movie is kick fucking ass.
Minus one part that bothers me.
When he explodes Mr. Smith.
No.
Agent Smith.
We'll get that. Two things. Okay. But Neo is just there, and he's got his little Gatling gun. He's like, and he hits everything in that damn room except for Morpheus. I'm like, Morpheus, just like fall on the floor or something. I don't know. But I guess he just bent bullets at that point, too.
He got shot in the ankle.
You're looking for reality in a movie where
this scene right here.
Yes.
That scene right there with her just falling with the glass, she's coming back.
That was such a badass.
Ed is our resident. Show us pictures that you guys at home cannot see.
You have to watch the movie.
No, it's a continuation of the scene that you were talking about, the shot that you were talking about, is when Neo grabs it and literally kind of drags himself and then stops himself at the top.
Oh, and then does that little hop.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Perfection.
You're talking about, instantly he knew, he's like, I don't care if I'm dying.
And then you have
to wrap that little rope thing, dude. And with the rope. And she's on the same page with me. His idea was almost like Captain America. He's like, I'm going to try to hold this plane up.
He goes from a little dweeby hacker to this badass.
And you have to think could he have held up the chopper? And the answer is yes, because
He's Luke fucking Skywalker.
Chopper, right?
That's where Morpheus was like, I was right. I knew I was right. I knew I was right.
You know what? One of my favorite characters, like literally hands down, is Tank. Tank, I thought was so great, but with the scene where when they realize and you see Tank's eyes just kind of going like, my God, he is the one.
Cypher. Amazing. Are you talking about Cypher?
No. Cypher. Yeah.
He's talking about when he's looking at the code and realizes that
he is the one. But no, Cypher. Now, Cypher, seeing this again 10, 15 years after I'd last seen it. I'm not mad at Cypher, but he has a big.
I'm mad at him that he killed fucking everyone.
He
wanted the steak.
His role, though,
what I do for a nice ribeye.
His role was bigger and more important.
I remember,
I remember it. And I thought Joe Pantoliano, he's literally one of the best kind of character actors. I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Memento,
absolutely.
Teddy.
Oh, fuck. I'm just saying, the last ending of the final battle scene between Neo and Agent Smith. I mean, I'm going to say this, dude. That's one of the best fucking fight scenes in movie history. I'm just saying, dude. It's fucking dope.
When they both run at each other, jump, and start
it's
shooting.
It's so great.
The ripples of the bullets.
The backflip off the train tracks with the train coming.
That
was
dope too.
That shit is cinematic brilliance.
You are right.
And then when he fucking just like stops the bullets and everything like that.
And then they just
just doing a slow motion.
My dad always used to say this about essays, you know, that
everyone.
Sorry to diminish your
profession. We call them papers, not essays.
Whatever. It was... teachers like form over substance. It's not about what you say, it's how you say it. You got to make sure that it's in the right format. You got to make sure that you're using the right quotes and all this bullshit. Wachowskis are the form over substance directors.
You think so?
Well, hold on. Because all the scenes that they created were perfectly centered. When he flips the rope, it perfectly makes this arc. They're beautiful. And then... they inserted form in the form of the story, which was magnificent. If you look at their other works like Speed Racer and some other stuff, they don't have the substance. They have the form, but
And you look at the other two movies, the two Matrix movies, they're terrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's because this was a major step out on the ledge for the production studio. They realized that this is their one chance. This is their one ability to do something.
This was one of three scripts that were bought at the same time by Warner Brothers, and they petitioned to direct it. This was not like the primary script. They threw this in to try and get some more money.
That's insane.
I also, can we go back to the fight scene with Agent Smith and Neo? Because that's where Neo realized, okay, I just pretty much fought my life out of, you know, with Agent Smith. I killed him, and all of a sudden he's backed out of the fucking train like that. It's like, oh shit, I have to leave.
But then
I have to leave. So that I loved how he's like, I'm not running anymore. I'm gonna fight him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that was like a big scene. Everyone, that's where
they
Trinity
and
everyone, you know, was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And they fought, but then he had to run, and he was jumping off.
And then
off
I love it when we see that he is now seeing completely in the Matrix.
It's fucking awesome.
Oh. Just amazing.
We're talking about when he actually is in the hotel room.
He's in that little apartment that does the flop house.
But let's talk about the death of Smith and how stupid that was.
All right. If this movie has a flaw, which it does.
Yes, it does.
Is the death of Agent Smith. That was the dumbest fucking thing I've ever. You go inside a body and then explode him from the inside.
Not if you're a virus, yo. I'm just saying. So there are reasons.
There are reasons. But I guess other than that, you and Brandon has a problem with the flying. But other than that, the close of this movie is kind of like the biggest resistance fuck you that you possibly could do. He's on the phone talking into the Matrix saying, I'm going to wake everyone up. I'm going to change the world.
And you got Rage Against Machine in the background.
God, so good.
That's how you end a fucking movie.
I mean,
right,
that's
there.
A way to end it.
I would have liked, instead of going into Agent Smith, you know, how he was running at him, him hit him so hard, it pushes Agent Smith out of the body, you know, just like pushes him out, and then him, and then him explode.
I'm gonna go ahead and say this. I feel like they ran out of money. I feel like they ran out of CG.
I
think that's true.
I feel like they ran out of time. And it just ran out of a lot of like.
Because I mean, even if he had broken up into ones and zeros, like even if he had just like literally collapsed into a billion pieces, I think it would have been better. It's kind of like when Voldemort died at the end of Harry Potter.
He just disintegrates and shit.
Well, and that was such a very disappointing.
You expected
end.
So much out of
well,
that.
Well, no, he should have died as a man because he was mortal. He should have just died. Like that's how it was in the book. But same concept is like this. He should have disintegrated into nothingness. Yeah. Agent Smith should have. It's just like, completely.
It would have been
concept.
Cool to see him hit him so hard that on the other side of the world, because he's a robot, I guess,
hit
on the other
you
side,
so hard,
right?
Feel it on the other side of the world.
Yeah, just he's I mean, Neo feels it, right? Neo feels it. He's right. Bleeding in the real world. It would have been cool if he would have done the same thing to the machine, and the machine broke.
And
or
I'm
going to
say that's what was so brilliant about Terminator 2, when the light just goes.
Oh, don't! I haven't seen it yet.
I'm just saying, thumbs up, my friend.
Thumbs up, my friend.
That brings us to the intro review. Now, time in the podcast where each of the hosts provides his score on the following scale. Eddie, can you provide that scale, please?
0, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it. 1, a failed first cocktail. 2, a happy buzz. 3, you're going to Uber lifting home. 4, a rough morning to watch a shame. 5, blackout, shit face, spring break drunk. Gentlemen, let's start with Jeremiah.
Rewatching The Matrix, and visually I think it will go down as maybe the coolest, maybe, perhaps maybe, one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made. Just maybe. I think the special effects hold up. They had game-changing action sequence, great characters. Maybe not develop, but the characters were fucking great. I think it had a mind-blowing premise that it's rare today to even find on feature films for like original concept. I mean, I think it marks the question, are we part of the Matrix social media that we are stuck in right now? So, I mean, there's a few problems
Ooh,
with
like
it.
That. I
you know?
Like that.
There's a few problems to it. I mean, I'm not really a fan of the real world part of the scene, parts of the movie. I wanted to go back to The Matrix, you know? Maybe that's like the kid in me and everything like that. But maybe I just want to be a part of the blue pill and just be in The Matrix. Fuck it, man. However, I think The Matrix is a revelation film that changed cinema as how we see it. And I cannot wait for Matrix 4 because I want to go further down the rabbit hole.
Nice.
So it's a 1.5 score for me. Yeah. It's a feel-good cocktail. You know what? I'm going to have a little extra shots with it. So it's a 1.5 for me, guys.
Good. I'll go and take mine. So this is a movie that I picked, again, not having seen it in basically a decade, and just remembering it. I've seen it, you know, a bunch of times back in the early 2000s and or 2000s or whatever. Anyway, I picked it because it always stood out as such an important film. Technologically, CGI-based, and then influential in so many different ways. Again, it's been parodied so many times that when something is parodied, when something is made fun of, when something is copied and emulated, it means that the original is important. The Matrix is important to cinema. It just is. Take out 2, 3. I agree. I'm going to watch 2 and 3 before I see 4. I'm going to go see 4 in theaters. Hopefully we don't have, you know, the Omega strand at that point or
we
whatever.
We can see it in HBO Max.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. So this movie, I do think, I agree, it stands out. Or it stands...
Stands
the test of time. Exactly. I do think it has some problems. It has some story problems. Story problems that I didn't see when I was younger and just enjoying it for the movie that it is. It has a lot of... It brings a lot of questions to the world, and the reality is they needed an extra 2 hours to try to explain things that they just didn't have.
They took another 4 and they hit the shit the bed.
Exactly. So that's why they should have done 2 only. That said, it is a great movie. It has problems. I'm conflicted as heck to score it, but I'm going to go with a 1.25. I think that it is a feel-good first cocktail.
With a half a shot.
With a little bit of a spillover and lapping it up off the bar. So, Ed...
I definitely think that this movie stands strong in the movie world, especially 1999 movies, that when you think of movies that have a pivotal point of just how Kung Fu is even fought and how everything
is.
Yeah, it was truly amazing and time-telling. Like, I definitely will watch this movie with my kids once they get older. I'm not going to ever show them two or three. That's up to them. But
I hate to.
Yeah. Sorry, like, it just, they really messed up. And I don't want, it's not, I'm not trying to grade the movie on based off of that. It was a movie that I feel like it was easily made, but there's also the CGI. It was almost like the birth of text messaging, you know, and then you realize down the road, you know, you have all these other ways of communication besides text messaging, and that's kind of like CGI. It just got better and better and better and better. But without text messaging, they would never have done it. You know, before that was, you know, email. I mean, you know, it's just different ways. I don't know. It was just, I loved how they stopped and they rotated and they, if you could see other scenes and see other angles of the fight. I really like the characters in this movie. It's hard to try to give a score right now, so I'm trying to compare it to.
Yeah.
Because this is a great movie. It's above average for me, personally. So I'm going to give it a 2.25.
You are so harsh.
I'm real.
Buckle up.
Hey,
so.
What are you breathing right now?
What is air?
What is air?
Do you believe?
Would you have breathed air if I didn't tell you about it?
Do you believe?
All right,
Sean, wrap it up, dude.
Okay, so I look at this movie from a couple of different perspectives. Do I think that the story is revolutionary? Not really. It's good. It's very good. It feels very fresh, but it's kind of the more I read about it, the more I was like, oh, it's Terminator. It's apocalyptic. But they've put a spin on it that I think is revolutionary. I think the revolutionary
mainstream simulation theory
for sure. The main thing that this movie birthed was a new way to tell a story on screen. It showed the world that you were not bound by regular mortal filmmaking techniques. You could stop time. You could turn the camera. You could follow bullets. You could do a bunch of shit that you could never have pulled off before realistically and convincingly. And they did do all of that. They convinced me, as I'm watching this movie, that the world might be a simulation and that we don't have control over everything that's going on. And if somebody could come in and hack the Matrix, then things would change. It revolutionized filmmaking from that perspective. Do I think that the acting was particularly magnificent? No. I think Lawrence Fishburne was on point. I think Lawrence
very
Fishburne
Obi-Wan.
Was very good. Mm-hmm. I think that Carrie-Anne Moss was a 7 out of 10. I think Keanu Reeves was a solid 6, as he always is.
You really like Dorpheus? I mean, Morpheus? Morpheus, I meant.
I mean, to me, Lawrence Fishburne brought a grounding to this movie that really we didn't really talk about. And I love Lawrence Fishburne. I think he's just a magnificent actor.
He's great in John Wick, by the way.
I have not seen John Wick. But he was in a movie with Sean Connery called Just Cause. It was really quite good.
Oh, yeah.
But he creates this reality.
He's great in Apocalypse Now,
like,
too.
Like, he brings a reality to it that I think that this movie needed, and he grounded it pretty magnificently. So I'm having a hard time scoring it because from the revolutionary side, it's a 0. But from a story side and a acting side and all the stuff that makes a movie, it's not. It's not even close. I'm looking at our list and I'm like, okay, is it better than Independence Day? Fuck yeah. Is it better than Deadpool? I think Deadpool did more for film, you know, nowadays than Matrix did there. I don't know. So I'm looking at a 2. I think a 2 is where it deserves to be. I think it's a little bit above average, but it's not quite as revolutionary and perfect as other films that I think have done that for movies. So Eddie, when we take those scores and divide by 4, what does that give the Matrix?
That's a 1.75, Sean.
1.75. And Brandon, when we put that on our list of movies that we've reviewed, where does that put us?
That would be a JP thing. Don't know why.
Sorry,
we're
Jeremiah.
Going to me.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Is this your first time, Sean?
No, it's tied for 14th with American Pie and another movie that you just talked about,
wow.
Deadpool.
Tied with a 1999 movie.
American Pie, The Sting, and Deadpool.
Yeah.
So they're all at 1.75, and what's above that? What's better than The Matrix?
Galaxy Quest, another 1999 film. You've got Psycho, Pirates of the Caribbean, Big Fish.
What is that movie?
Oh, I don't know.
Lost episodes.
Let's be real honest, guys. You're not going to hear this because...
First of all, everyone, what is one of the biggest, highest rating episodes of our category in our vault? It has to be The Shining. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Brandon. Thank you to you listeners. Sorry. It's our vault. It's like the Disney vault.
You know, category.
I feel like that's a good place for it. I feel like the system...
I feel like you're literally saying that every 2 weeks.
Well, because
it actually makes sense on the list. I'm sorry.
Most of our 1999 movies are in the same fucking spot.
Hey, bro. Yeah, the numbers don't lie. It's where it's supposed to be.
Let's wrap this
up.
I hope you choke on your microphone.
It's a 1.1.
Choke on your damn microphone.
It's a 1.75.
If you enjoyed our review or fan of the podcast, we ask that you please subscribe.
It's a pretty good score.
And leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also find us on Instagram at @thegentlemanpodcast.
The dot means a lot.
You have to watch this movie like a couple times.
You can visit our website at thegentlemanpodcast.com, and we ask you, please, if you have anything to say, any comments, we will voice your opinions on the show. We're very happy to do that. Please.
And negative.
Send in emails. Let us know what you think. If you think that we're wrong, if you want us to change, probably won't change, but go ahead and send us an email.
You can't change me. I'm from the streets.
It's also this. Good luck.
Good luck.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to close this one out, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers. For watching The Matrix.
Never Let Me Go, Jack.
It's a good spot.
Yeah.
You have to watch the movie at least twice.
You do.